What is up? Welcome to another edition of the Utilization Report Debrief, except today, a little bit of a different spin. It is the Free Agency Debrief. I'm Marcus Grant, joined by Dwayne McFarland and Ian Harditz, and we are here live on the interwebs, coming to you through a series of tubes as we get through free agency. And normally, Dwayne and I are here this time of the week. Ian, you were here during the season, got to take a little bit of a respite. How are we feeling now that we are here in the heart of free agency?
Man, Marcus, I've been writing blurbs since Sunday afternoon. These guys, for some reason, just want to break all the news around 1 a.m. and then at 8 a.m. when Ian's trying to catch up just a little bit. But still a great day to be great. News is flying, and we got a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. So we are doing this live right now. We got a bunch of things to talk about that happened yesterday, sort of later in the day. Of course, we'll all be monitoring our Twitter timelines for things that may be happening sort of in real time. But hey, let's just dive right into this because there are a whole lot of names, a whole lot of things happening. And Dwayne, let's start in the NFC North, because there's been a ton of movement in that division over the last 24 hours or so. The latest news is that Aaron Jones is leaving Green Bay. He was actually leaving Green Bay, I guess, officially yesterday when he was announced to be released. He is just going over to Minnesota now, where he signs a one-year deal for the Vikings. So the Packers, they add Josh Jacobs. That pushes Aaron Jones out. He goes to Minnesota. How does this work? Because it just seemed like not that long ago, they were talking up Ty Chandler in Minnesota. So now we've got a two-headed monster, it looks like.
Yeah, I don't know how two-headed it will be, to be honest. Like, I'm hoping this finally means we get to free Aaron Jones, but it is a player that's dealt with some injuries. He is getting up there in age. He'll be 29. He'll be almost 30 when the season starts. He was 28.8, technically, last year when the season started. So 29.8, almost 30. So he's definitely at that spot, you know, where you could start to drop off. But I think the big thing for me, Marcus, with Aaron Jones is the fact that we know he's a really good receiver out of the backfield. Now, we've never seen a team truly unleash him in that capacity. It seems like there's always been one roadblock or another. I remember when it was Jamal Williams, and we're like, how's Jamal Williams getting the passing down snaps over Aaron Jones? Last year, we did finally see him freed in the playoffs, and really good things happened. So very explosive player. A guy that can work out of the backfield. And if you look at the history of running backs, right, the most sticky thing year over year is that passing production. It's also the thing that separates running backs, you know, into different tiers. You know, we have the guys that we know can come in and handle a lot on the ground, but can they also get that work in the passing game? So it really will come down to, like, what kind of workload can we expect, you know, the split to be in Minnesota? But, like, if I was leaning into it today, I'm thinking it's more like 60-40 Aaron Jones. I think, you know, Ty Chandler, maybe somebody else gets a little bit of work. Obviously, other dominoes could fall here. But I think you could argue for a one-year deal for $7 million, you know, they may have gotten the best running back. I think Aaron Jones right now is a better running back than Josh Jacobs all around. Now, can he stay healthy, I think, is a different question. But if I was just grading his skill set, I think Aaron Jones is a better player than Josh Jacobs, who the Packers just signed. Now, Josh Jacobs is not going into his age 30 season, right? This guy's still 26. I know it doesn't seem like that. So I get what the Packers are doing, but I'm saying for 1 year, if I've just got to be as good once as I ever was, then I think Aaron Jones is the guy that I like the most. Now, I would have liked it a lot more, Marcus, if they still had Kirk Cousins.
That was going to be my question to you, Ian, is how much does it concern you that there's no Kirk Cousins? I mean, Aaron Jones, for the first part of his career, he had Aaron Rodgers. Last year, he had Jordan Love, who definitely showed us some things at the quarterback position. I mean, we'll talk about the signing that the Vikings had at quarterback. I don't know if that means that's the guy in week one. Does the quarterback situation concern you about Aaron Jones?
Absolutely. We're talking about the lead back inside of a, you know, formerly Packers offense that was right up there with the 49ers, honestly, during the second half of last season to now Sam Darnold again. And now we're going to have all these, you know, film grinders go show us the three or four dope throws that Darnold has made over the last 5 years and tell us that he just hasn't been put in a position to succeed. But I don't know, guys. I kind of draw the line after 56 starts, and we still can't find an advanced stat that says Darnold is anything other than a terrible quarterback. So, you know, I'm not really worried about Ty Chandler, honestly. It took Alexander Mattison being horrible and then injured, and then also a newfound trade of Cam Akers to tear another Achilles for Ty Chandler the find the football field in the first place last season. So I think it'll be the Aaron Jones show to an extent, and hopefully he can maintain that high-end efficiency, because I think the scoring opportunities are going to dry up inside what's probably going to be a terrible offense. And yeah, I hope they throw him the football, but if you do look at Kevin O'Connell, really has taken a page out of Sean McVay's playbook in terms of not really featuring the running backs in the passing game. Ravens, Rams, and the Vikings, only three offenses with under 150 targets to their RBs over the past two seasons. So a lot of red flags here for Aaron Jones, guys. I mean, right now he's sitting as the RB16 early ADP, and that's obviously when we had thought he was going to be back with the Packers. So if he slides down that RB2 borderline, then okay, I can sign up for that. But the way I'm seeing it right now, if we're trying to check the boxes of like offensive environment, no, that's an X for me. Workload, we're hopeful that's going to be okay, but not exactly a given. Talent, we like it, but he's also going to be 30 years old in December. It's a lot of red flags, Marcus.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, it's interesting that he leaves Green Bay, where obviously he probably would have been sharing time. Now he gets maybe his own opportunity in Minnesota, but the offense is not what it was the years that he was with the Packers. Meanwhile, in Cincinnati, Zach Moss looks like he's going to be the guy. And I guess, Dwayne, we just want to talk about these guys together, right? Because Zach Moss signs with the Cincinnati Bengals. There was talk that Joe Mixon was going to be cut. Instead, he is traded from Cincinnati to the Houston Texans. So now both these guys have, in theory, their own situations. I guess let's start with Zach Moss, though. I mean, Joe Mixon carved out a really nice career, was a really nice fantasy piece for Cincinnati. Zach Moss has had flashes. Do you have a level of confidence that he can be the guy over a stretch of 17 games?
I think that Zach Moss can be as good as Joe Mixon, which isn't really it's not a very high bar with how inefficient that, you know, Mixon has been over the last several years. So, we saw Zach Moss last year. Obviously, everybody knows what he did when Jonathan Taylor was out. But the more impressive thing to me was like how he really just kind of hung on longer than we thought he would, even once JT was back. Now, some of that might have been due to JT really getting ramped back up. Eventually, we did see JT more back in that 1A kind of role, but it took a bit for that to happen, you know, and I think a lot of that comes back also to not just JT, you know, ramping up, but Zach Moss was playing really well. Do I think that Zach Moss is suddenly going to be this great running back? No, not necessarily, but you heard Ian just start talking about the check marks. Number one, the thing we care about most in fantasy is going to be volume, and he's going to reside in an offense that we expect to score a lot of points. And when I look at the rest of the depth chart, there's Chase Brown, which I do think could be a competitive factor. It would not surprise me at all if Chase Brown forces this into more of a split. But last year, really, the Bengals, they were reticent to give this guy a full-time role, even though he flashed in a big way. Now, Chase Brown was a rookie, so that can come down to, you know, do they trust him on passing downs, all those sort of things. So I think there's room here for this to still be a duo. But overall, I think that this is, I don't know that we could have really hoped for better for Zach Moss. So I would expect him to, if I had to call it today, probably step into the majority of what Joe Mixon leaves behind, at least half of it, right? And then have Chase Brown as that change of pace. But I still think Brown's the guy that has the most upside. Like if everything breaks his way, Brown is the guy that we know can break the long runs, all those sort of things. But you guys have heard me recently talking about efficiency and all these different things. You know, they're just not very, they're not that sticky year over year, and they don't ultimately matter a ton when it comes down to scoring fantasy points. So this will just really come down to who the coaches want to have on the field. It could be a split, but I do love the offense, Marcus.
I mean, obviously the offense is great there in Cincinnati, and Ian, I mean, Dwayne talked about Zach Moss could be as good as Joe Mixon. So now Mixon leaves Cincinnati. He goes to Houston. They had a very good offensive year with CJ Stroud, Tank Dell, Nico Collins, on and on and on. In terms of a one-to-one matchup, I mean, is the offense as good in Houston and Cincinnati? Can Joe Mixon produce the same way in Houston he did in Cincinnati?
This is easily the best case, you know, fantasy outcome for Mixon. We're talking about a guy that, I mean, this time, and wasn't even this time yesterday, it was like 12 hours ago. I mean, I think it would have been reasonable to not assume he was completely left for dead in the NFL, but it wasn't looking good, guys. I mean, Dwayne mentioned the inefficiency and just some of the off-the-field problems we've had over the past year or two. It seemed like, you know, almost a Kareem Hunt-esque situation where even if the player talent still is up there, you know, and decent enough, I don't think NFL teams were going to be lining up to give him that opportunity. But here we are, and again, he winds up in an offense that You know, overall, yes, I would take the Bengals over the Texans in 2024, but I think a lot of us expect both of them to be among the league's top 10 scoring units. And at last season, Bobby Slowick really down the stretch proved willing to only lean on Devin Singletary and pretty much ignore Damian Pierce. So I do think Mixon, while, you know, he has been struggling to gain over even 4 yards per carry more years than not in recent history, I think he's going to step into that every down role in a pretty great scoring offense. And honestly, I'd be kind of curious what the actual projections are going to change versus, you know, Cincy to Houston. So it's not exactly a one for one. You know, there is something to be said about having that continuity in the same system, in the same city and everything like that. But man, Dwayne, again, like other than Dallas, I don't think this could have worked out better for Mixon. He's going to be right there, I would say, alongside guys, you know, like James Conner in that low end borderline RB2, you know, mindset where it's like, no, I don't, again, we're not going to be ranking him top 10 or anything like that, but volume based RB2 and a good offense could have done a lot worse.
Yeah, I think I look at them as really equal offenses as far as, you know, how good I think they are. Obviously, we would give the, you know, the tiebreaker to Cincinnati because they've been doing it longer. And we know Joe Burrow is a stud quarterback. Like CJ Stroud, we think is going to be a stud quarterback, but we only have that one data point. So we would still lean to the Bengals. But like if I look at offensive coordinator, I get Bobby Slowick. I think that's a much more friendly, you know, run scheme than what you're dealing with in Cincinnati. Not very imaginative, a lot of inside zone kind of stuff, just out of shotgun, not very innovative. So I think, you know, there could be some things here that work to Mixon's advantage just from a scheming standpoint with Slowick, who was a very hot commodity this offseason, but was a big get for the Texans to get him to return. So, you know, I think it's probably a neutral overall move, like once you add it all up, but it wouldn't surprise me. Like, what would you put the over-under right now? Because the biggest thing for Mixon, Ian, it's going to be scoring rushing touchdowns. Like, where would you put that over-under right now on rushing touchdowns for Mixon if you had to draw the line? You're Vegas, Ian. Yeah. You get to be Vegas right now and set the line.
Let's see. I'd say first instinct was 8.5. I'm looking at the Texans right now. I mean, that's actually pretty...
I think you could get to 10, but I think 8.5 would be a good line.
Singletary, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Like combined for 6 last year, which is, you know, low. Doesn't mean it has to be next year. I think 8.5, 7.5 is about right.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he got the 10 touchdowns. And the other thing with Mixon is we have seen him multiple times in his career handle that 2-minute offense. And Damian Pierce is not really the guy that would do that. So there would have to be another unique domino to fall for me to think that Mixon wasn't going to be out there on passing downs. Last year, he had 78% of the 2-minute offense for the Bengals. If you look at his target share, it was decent, 11%. So, I mean, he's like a borderline running back too when it comes to receiving profile. Like, he's not going to blow you away, and they've got these other weapons in the passing game, but he's a fine check down option, which can add a little bit of value to his overall fantasy profile.
Yeah, no, I think as Ian said, this was maybe one of the best possible landing spots for Joe Mixon. So, you know, instead of...
Yeah, this is where we hope Barkley would go.
Yeah, no, I mean, exactly. We were hoping Saquon Barkley would land here. So Joe Mixon landing in Houston, I think about as good as he could possibly have asked for, especially for a guy who was a cut candidate just, you know, it seems like several hours ago. So there it is. Austin Eckler lands in Washington, 2 years, $11.4 million. I was going to say I'm surprised to see him sign this early, but then again, the way the running backs have been flying off the market in the early part of free agency, I guess it's not really a surprise. I mean, Dwayne, this is a guy who I think a lot of what we saw last year was him sort of dealing with nagging injuries, right? He had a high ankle sprain early. I felt like he tried to rush back because he, I think, one, wanted to help the Chargers, two, wanted to help his own free agency opportunity, and it just never really worked out. I don't know about you. Seeing him land with the Commanders, I am sort of meh about it. I mean, I just, there's so many questions about that offense, but I think in terms of opportunity, you know, I think he definitely steps ahead of Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson, obviously gone. So I think opportunity is there. I just, Dwayne, I'm not sure about the offense in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, the coaching staff for the Commanders have been, you know, singing the praises, and it's really hard to decipher this kind of stuff, especially this early in the offseason. Some coach speak matters, some coach speak doesn't. Like, coach speak index, major hat tip to them. But, like, they talk positively, you know, about Brian Robinson, but then they go at Austin Eckler. It wasn't a huge deal. You know, you got 2 years here for $11.4 million. So I think there's a range of outcomes. Like, Eckler could come in and be the lead back, but it's also really possible that he's just the passing down back, right? And is a little bit of a change of pace from what we have with Brian Robinson. But I think the key thing here, I think you hit on the first thing, probably dealing with somewhat of an injury last year. I think that's part of why we only saw 4% of his carries go for 10 plus yards. He was below where we're used to seeing for yards after contact, missed tackles forced. Those are the two data points that running backs really own, even though they don't matter that much for fantasy. They can help us understand, like, is a player deteriorating or not? And those were low, but I do think the high ankle sprain could have had something to do with it. But I think the bigger thing here really just comes back to probably takes over the passing down right away. And we know this is a guy that can play all of the downs. So even if he doesn't get that role to start the season, there are a lot of doors that could open. Brian Robinson could suffer an injury. Brian Robinson could be ineffective, which he's done for pretty big periods of time, you know, over the course of his career so far. And those are all things that could open more opportunity for Eckler. The question is just how excited are we about that with the Commanders? Obviously, they're probably going to take the quarterback in the draft. You know, they did sign Marcus Mariota. Woo, that really gets us inspired. They have Sam Howell still on the roster. They're probably going quarterback, you know, with that number two selection. So that means we're either dealing with a rookie running back, I mean, with a rookie quarterback that could be really raw, especially, you know, if we're talking about taking someone like Daniels. Drake May, kind of on the same page. Like, we all know that Caleb Williams is the number one, right? He's the guy we want the most. So I think once you put all that together, little bit of passing game concerns. Also, you know, Terry McLaurin's a good receiver. Jahan Dotson was not good last year, but was good the year before. Like, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But Curtis Samuel is gone. So I do think that's worth noting. Logan Thomas is gone. And usually, if you're a running back and you're going to have to fight with other positions in the pecking order for targets, and you're, you know, you're playing that running back position, it's usually with the slot wide receiver and the tight end. So that could be a positive for Eckler. But like, if I had to call it right now, I don't think Eckler makes my top 24. Running backs. Like, I think I'm looking at him as a running back three. That could change as we get more information, you know, in the preseason.
Yeah. I mean, Ian, Dwayne sort of hit on it a little bit there, talking about the quarterbacks. How much are you sort of reserving final judgment until you see what Washington does? Because presumably they're drafting somebody.
We'll say, I mean, just kind of adding Marcus Mariota. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But I would think if you wanted to try to match the scheme a little bit closer to Jaden Daniels than perhaps Drake May. I know that's, you know, the big kind of 1-2 ticket. We're trying to see what they're going to do there. So we'll see what happens. But honestly, I think this landing spot could have been worse. Like, okay, wasn't Houston, wasn't Dallas. I get it. But Austin Eckler, like, okay, yeah, Brian Robinson's there. Eckler's career high carries in the season anyway is 206. I mean, he's on record saying that he doesn't want to be this, you know, 300 rush attempt per year guy. And he actually got to reunite with, you know, his former head coach, Anthony Lynn, one of the few guys who actually has signed up to give Eckler that fantasy-friendly role. So can't agree enough with you, Marcus, about, you know, the high ankle sprain. It's amazing to me how much, like, Tony Pollard slack that he kind of gets throughout this offseason for being injured when Eckler is actually the one that got injured actively in 2023, tried to come back and play through the pain, and sadly, you know, I just don't think we give NFL players enough benefit of the doubt after a week or two of doing that. So, yeah, go back and watch week one when he had 160 yards on 20 touches. Like, I checked next-gen stats. We've all seen the Packers run where he only hit 13 miles per hour. He hit 19.6 in week one when he seemed to be a little bit healthier. So I understand that father time is coming and we shouldn't exactly expect the injuries to completely ease up. But, you know, 28-year-old running back, one season removed from kind of breaking fantasy football and winning us our leagues. I'm with Dwayne, where I don't think it's going to be a given that he's sliding in the top 24. But, you know, Dwayne, we've already said it a couple times this year. Don't hate the player, hate the ADP. I think it could be a decent value now in that RB3 landscape, especially on somewhere like Underdog, where, like, you start looking at it, it's Austin Eckler or guys like Romeo Doubs and Dontavian Wicks. I mean, you're really not giving up that big of an opportunity cost to get Eckler at this point. Best years probably in the past, but we're really valuing him at his complete floor as opposed to that ceiling that, again, really didn't happen all that long ago.
Yeah, no, not at all. I think there's still something left in the tank. Just a curious issue of how Washington decides to deploy him within the context of their offense.
Marcus Mariota, like, is this going to be his new thing where he just gets to go to whatever team wants to have a mobile quarterback so he can be their backup? He's going to be the new Chase Daniel, and it's going to drive you nuts. But he's only going to go to teams that have the mobile quarterback.
He's getting that bump from showing up on that Netflix QB show, I guess. America just fell in love with him, man.
Everybody just loves Marcus Mariota
now.
Who knew? Who knew? Meanwhile, the Gus bus decides to take a cross-country trip and stop in Los Angeles. Gus Edwards signs with the Chargers 2 years, $6.5 million. Obviously, the money is not particularly big, Dwayne, but I look at this as Jim Harbaugh, Greg Roman coming in and really sort of staking their claim that they want to run the football. You know, we'll see how much Gus Edwards takes the lead versus, say, Josh Kelly working in there, but this does seem to signal a change in how the Chargers want to sort of run their offense right now.
Yeah, it is kind of funny, though. Hey, we want to run the ball, and we have all these other running backs available, and we go with Gus Edwards. Now, I know Ian's gonna shame me here. He's going to shout off all the top things about Gus Edwards and his career yards per carry and all those things. So I'm not trying to hate on
him. It's under five now. It's under five now.
It's under five now, yeah. I'm not trying to hate on Gus. But to your point, Marcus, I think, like, stylistically, when you look at the kind of running back that they like to have, I think Edwards fits that, right? He can be the guy that can run between the tackles. He can really punish opposing defenders. You get late in the game. If you've got a lead, you know, you're wearing the other team down. I think Gus Edwards can do all of those things. I think we certainly have more dominoes to fall at the running back position for the Chargers. I would not be surprised if they add another two players, maybe one in the draft, maybe still get another free agent. Isaiah Spiller hasn't really done anything. Josh Kelly, he had the chance last year, and he really just kind of muffed the whole thing away. So I think there's still going to be more to go here. But, as of today, like, I think Gus Edwards is the running back one on the Chargers. So, I mean, that is worth something. But I think the biggest takeaway is what you said. Like, they want to have a physical ground game. They're going to want to establish it, as they like to say. And, we've seen this from Greg Roman. We've seen it from Jim Harbaugh. But I would expect some sort of a committee, and it could possibly be three backs, not just two.
Yeah, would not be surprising if that happens there. It makes me feel a little bit better about Justin Herbert. I mean, when Harbaugh and Roman took over, I was a little bit worried about what this was going to be. But I think with that committee potentially forming, I think I can feel a little bit more comfortable about Herbo there.
This probably, though, sorry, not to spend too much time on my guy Gus Bus, but like this prop, I mean, going from John to Jim Harbaugh, I wouldn't have been surprised if Gus Edwards didn't really carve out a role anywhere. I mean, as much as I love to spout out, you know, the historical yards per carry numbers from time to time, I mean, this does seem like for Gus, I mean, if we had to pick teams in the NFL where he could maybe try to flirt with that double-digit touchdown again, I mean, it probably is Baltimore. So I'm not going to make a habit of, trying to land Gus in every draft or anything, but this is a downer for me. I mean, the money isn't huge, but it's significant enough to believe he'll be on the roster. We know that, again, one Harbaugh has already signed up to give Gus double-digit carries over guys like J.K. Dobbins, who we appreciated more. I mean, if we see, Blake Corum has been the common match to the Chargers, the third or fourth round or something. This is a bummer for that. It does hurt.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. So we will keep an eye out on what the Chargers decide to do, I guess, the rest of free agency, but also when it gets to the draft. Meanwhile, Devin Singletary, formerly of the Houston Texans, he returns to the state of New York, played for the Bills. Now he is the man in New York with the Giants. Dwayne, look, he played well last year. I'm not going to take anything away from him. 3 years, $16.5 million for Devin Singletary. This can't be it, though, right? Like, this can't be the answer in the Giants' backfield right now.
I think it can be for now while they're rebuilding. I think they realize that they shouldn't have given Daniel Jones that contract. They've just got so many things that they've got to do that, running back just isn't really a priority for them right now. It's still not a bad deal in today's NFL for Singletary, getting $16.5 million. That's good work if you can get it, Marcus. I know it's not as much as you make over at NFL Network, but, some of us people just have to scrap out a living. But looking at Singletary, he's one of these guys, and we talk about it every year. He's kind of underrated. Like, he does all the things that we want, but he just never seems to get that full-time role. No one's ever willing to truly give him that, but we did see it down the stretch last year in Houston. And when you look at the depth chart right now for the Giants, like, I think it's pretty clear that he's going to be the lead guy. Now, they could also draft someone that creates more of a committee as well. But right now, I think looking at it, we wouldn't expect him to come in and take over a Saquon Barkley workload. But would I be surprised if Devin Singletary week one gets 65% of the rushing attempts for the Giants and plays 50% of the passing downs? No, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Not, again, coming back to like the complete picture, like not crazy about this offense. We already talked about Daniel Jones. They don't have, really that many weapons around him. So I think those things are issues. But from a pure volume standpoint, I think Devin Singletary is going to get his touches. And so I think he'll probably end up being drafted, as a running back three, and we'll see where the ADP lands on him. But I think that's probably going to be accurate. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if he really performs more like a running back two. Like, he's going to have the runway to get the volume. It's hard to see a big case for upside with him, though, Marcus, as well as he can play. Like, I would say he's an above average running back in the NFL, but that's not going to be enough to completely overcome the situation and make us think, oh my God, like, wow, look, I drafted Devin Singletary and I'm winning my league. Like, I struggle to find myself getting to that narrative on this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've sort of seen who he is, and I think you hit it on the head. He's a good running back. He's not the guy who's going to take either the Giants or your fantasy squad over the top, but he's certainly not going to be a boat anchor on either roster either, considering what he's given so far in his career. Ian, Antonio Gibson to the Patriots. I don't even really know what to say to set this up, but I will toss it to you about your thoughts with Antonio Gibson going to a New England team that is just very much in flux in so many ways.
Look, I've been a long time Antonio Gibson truther. And guys, there were some good years. Okay. I understand it wasn't the year.
I'm with you.
Right. Like, it's not like this came from nothing. My man's had over 1,000 yards, 1,300 yards in his second season, scored, 21 combined touchdowns in those 2 years. We had Kyle Allen telling us that he was set up to be DC, CMC, going on out there. So I get it. The butterfingers, the fumbles and stuff, Brian Robinson just being generally pretty good. It hasn't worked out, but you know what? The pass catching chops have been on display. And if it was going to take a little bit longer for a guy to figure things out on the ground, it probably would be for a, wait for it, converted wide receiver coming out of Memphis. So I do think, we're hearing all the right things from this landing spot. Doug Keed, shout out, one of the best Patriots beat reporters out there, is saying the Patriots, while they still do want to contend to lean on Ramondre Stevenson, we should have Gibson actually as that kind of scat back plus, role. So again, I don't think Gibson's going to be someone with too much standalone value, but looking at a Patriots offense that, let's face it, isn't exactly, overflowing with avenues to go with the football in the passing game in the first place, I do think we could see him again, rack up those 50 plus targets, maybe get back to making some explosive plays. And the big point that Doug made was also, should something happen to Stevenson, they trust Gibson to go ahead and take on that larger role. So I don't hate it, guys. I think the money afforded to him has at least surprised me. I mean, I was thinking more of like a 1 year, $2 or $3 million deal somewhere. So from that standpoint, Dwayne, arrows up. I'm not freaking out yet. Again, we've been burnt here before, but good news.
Not ideal for Ramondre though. Because no. If you're going to play on a bad team, like we expect the Patriots to be, like your path to fantasy relevance is if you're a really good back out of the backfield. And we've seen Ramondre do that. Now, he's not like he's not on the plane with the Christian McCaffreys and Alvin Kamaras, but like who is, right? He's a tier below that. Not this huge mismatch weapon that you can put, Ian on a Texas route against a linebacker and expect, create this big mismatch. But like he is a guy they like to get the ball to in the screen game. He can work a little bit downfield. So, I mean, he's a plus receiver. Well, Antonio Gibson theoretically is taking that role away. And so now we're going to be depending on between the tackle running for Ramondre Stevenson, which means you need to score a lot of touchdowns. Oh man, to me, this is a big hit to Ramondre. Now Gibson hasn't always been a picture of health. He's also been a guy that seems to find his way into coaching doghouses. So I don't want to overreact to Ramondre Stevenson, but I would expect his ADP to fall at this point, and we'll see where that settles in. Because I think that this is honestly, this is one of the worst things. I know Antonio Gibson's not a big name, but if you think about the role he's going to take, I think this is kind of one of the worst case scenarios for Ramondre, other than a Josh Jacobs or somebody like that landing there. But a low key signing, this isn't the one you wanted to see for the Patriots if you like Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I mean, let's see if the Patriots actually do use Antonio Gibson as a pass catcher, because we kept hearing that all those years in Washington, and it never really materialized.
They were giving him the snaps, though, in Washington, but it was weird. He wouldn't always get, the targets, but he was getting the 2-minute offense and those things. And it was frustrating because we never got the fruit of fantasy of what 2-minute offense normally brings with Antonio Gibson. But it also just meant it was also hurting the other running back, Brian Robinson or whoever it may have been, because they just didn't get to be on the field. Yeah. So it didn't really help either one of the backs. It just hurt them both.
And then last running back we got here so far, barring anything happening over the next little bit, Nyheim Hines. This one dropped this morning, goes to the Browns, 1 year, $3.5 million. I mean, Dwayne, this feels sort of like a depth add. I don't know.
And Hines can play special teams.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not as important in today's league with all the rule changes, but he can do some punt returning and things like that. But we're not really expecting Nick Chubb to be a big facet in the passing game. We're already worried enough about Nick Chubb, with his knee and being able to come back. So I don't think this changes a lot in Cleveland. I think we typically are assuming they're going to have somebody else try to play a lot of the passing downs. Well, now we just clearly know who it'll be. I think it will be Nyheim Hines. He'll handle most of the 2-minute offense, and it's not really a surprise, though.
Over Ford, you think?
I think he probably will. I mean, I think it's a question. I think it's TBD. Ford was nice, in the passing game last year. I think that Hines is different. I think Nyheim Hines, like, just landed in a situation where they drafted James Cook, you know, and then, well, they traded for Nyheim Hines when they already had James Cook.
Gatsky accident, yeah.
Yeah, but the Hines thing, like, he's a legit, like, he can be in that tier with Kamara and CMC just as a receiver, not like as a guy that you're going to hand the ball off to also 250 times in a season. But it'll be interesting to see if, like, he gets used that way with the Browns. But I think he's really a guy that can be a big time mismatch player in the passing game. So we'll have to watch it. But it's a good question. Ian Ford was also good on passing downs, but it could just be that annoying crap where now the passing downs are split two ways between him and Ford. And then Nick Chubb gets most of the early down work. This could end up like being kind of gross for the entire Cleveland running back situation, depending on how it shakes out.
That was kind of my bigger takeaway there. It's not like I'm, you know, Ford versus Hines. Like, okay, the fact we now have a third party in here is kind of the bigger problem there. So there has been some rumors about, you know, Nick Chubb potentially being a cap casualty. You know, we'll see what happens there. My God, that'd be so shitty, though, if the Browns pulled this, you know, Packers move where they let every single starting job go ahead and get filled before, you know, cutting the guy loose. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, for me, I mean, especially, you know, again, just getting my beak wet with some of these early drafts. Jerome Ford seems like someone who is drastically mispriced. I think it's a good example of someone, you know, again, kind of just, you know, not falling too far off what they did in 2023. People maybe not looking too far ahead yet in 2024 and what that most likely smaller role will look like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very curious. It's like, for all these guys, there's going to be so many ADP moves, I think, over the next week or two. I'm very curious to see how some of these guys land. Let's get to the quarterbacks. Maybe not as sexy, not as exciting in a lot of regards, but a couple of interesting names to note. One, Gardner Minshew goes to Las Vegas. It's funny. The Raiders have gone from Jimmy Garoppolo to Gardner Minshew, and like, that to me is sort of the two different sides of Vegas, right? Like, Jimmy Garoppolo is the guy who is, you know, he shows up in Vegas and he's wearing a nice suit and he goes to a nice dinner and he stays at like the Cosmopolitan and he has a very GQ sort of bougie version of Vegas. And Gardner Minshew is like the guy with the yard of margarita around his neck who probably has VIP status at the Excalibur and is just living it up on like the $5 blackjack tables. But the Raiders give him $25 million over 2 years. At this moment, he looks like the starter. Dwayne, do we think he is the starter come week one for Vegas?
Well, I mean, I think so. Gardner Minshew is honestly a name that I was hoping that the Vikings would look at instead of Sam Darnold, just for the sake of our guy, Justin Jefferson, as well as eventually TJ Hawkinson. Obviously, we've got Jordan Addison there as well. But Minshew's a guy that, like, over his last three full seasons has averaged 230 passing yards per game. Now, Kirk Cousins over the last 3 years is right around like 274, if I remember correctly. So this is going to be a step down, you know, whenever you look at what's going to happen for the Vikings. But looking at, you know, the Raiders, yeah, I think Minshew is probably a slight upgrade from Jimmy Garoppolo, but they're kind of in the same range. The biggest thing with Jimmy G is just not being able to stay healthy for a season. You can never depend on him. But Jimmy G is typically like a 225, 230 yards per game passing kind of player. Minshew fits that mold. I think it's a decent thing for Davante Adams and for Jacoby Myers, considering like what the other options are, right? Because these backup quarterbacks have gone pretty quickly. Like, if I had to pick, like, I think Minshew is the one that if you weren't getting Baker, you know, you weren't able to make a trade to get someone like Kirk Cousins, I think Minshew is the one. Like, if you're just thinking for fantasy purposes of, oh, can we at least have some yards? Like, I think Minshew is the guy that's shown he can do that. He didn't have to as much last year, you know, with the way the Colts wanted to run, you know, their offense. Now, they threw more when they had Minshew than whenever they had Anthony Richardson, but whenever they could get into the right game scripts, they were still looking to run the ball. And that could still be the case here. We have Antonio Pierce, you know, former defensive coordinator. They're probably going to try to be pretty conservative on offense, but it's one of these things where, like, we're not screaming from the rooftops, oh my God, they got Gardner Minshew, but I do think it's better than some of the alternatives. I would rather have Minshew for a fantasy perspective than I would Jacoby Brissett.
I was going to say, Ian, is this better or worse for Davante Adams?
Better than Aiden O'Connell, but like, that's the bar. That's the bar we're setting here in the year 2024. Why is it between these two? I think this is the most disappointing quarterback situation developing right now. I mean, you could argue Denver as well. I mean, well, what are we doing, AFC West? You just decided that, I guess, you can't ever get close to Mahomes. So like, why even try at this point? So it's disappointing. Again, I know what Dwayne's saying, like, okay, Minshew, I think he's a top 30 quarterback on planet Earth. It's about it, though. We've seen this time and time again. Like in a brilliantly schemed Shane Steichen Colts offense, my man's threw 16 touchdowns last year. So I don't know, guys. Again, slight boost for Devontae relative to Aiden O'Connell, but I just get sad about the fact that we're going to have to watch Justin Fields now on the bench while Gardner Minshew and Sam Darnold and whoever the hell else is going to be out there getting this done. So, yeah, the Jacoby Brissetts of the world, the Jameis Winstons, the Tyrod Taylors, you know, we can go back and forth and say who's, you know, better. But at the end of the day, they're all guys that, you know, we absolutely don't expect to be leading a competent contender. So what are we doing with it, you know? Because I'm pretty sure Davante Adams and Max Crosby are there right now to be competing. Antonio Pierce seems to be preaching that day in and day out. I feel like the Raiders are doing a disservice to their, you know, team, fans, organization themselves, just by actually unironically going into the season with Minshew and Aiden O'Connell as their quarterback competition. So cool.
They could be drafting a quarterback as well, but yeah.
It's, hope so.
Yeah, it's still definitely in the realm of possibility. It's funny. I have a really good friend who, you know, we grew up in the Bay Area together. We've been 49er fans. He also sort of has a soft spot in his heart for the Raiders. And he texted me yesterday and he says, the 49ers are sort of like my responsible son who goes out to college and gets a degree and has a good job. He said, the Raiders are my screw up son who wants to smoke weed all day and just has a job at the mall. That is sort of the way.
Not anything wrong with that.
But he's looking at it. Meanwhile, let's move on to Sam Darnold, who signs a one-year deal for $10 million with the Minnesota Vikings. He takes over for Kirk Cousins. I mean, look, Dwayne, this isn't about Sam Darnold, right? We're not drafting him in fantasy unless, you know, worst-case scenario, I guess, two quarterback leagues. I want to know how you feel now about Justin Jefferson.
This is not ideal. This is not good, Bob. You know, Sam Darnold has averaged 215 yards passing per start. Kirk Cousins over the last 3 years was at 274. We're going to get a drop off here. And I know folks are going to say, well, he's got Justin Jefferson. He's going to throw for more yards. Yeah, he will. Like 10 more yards per game, 15 more yards per game. We don't see quarterbacks suddenly transform from being Sam Darnold. I won't use something else to describe him. We'll just call him Sam Darnold. You don't transform from Sam Darnold into suddenly being some complete stud. And I know people, they'll point to Brock Purdy, but do we really know Brock Purdy isn't just pretty good anyway? And it's a different situation. He's surrounded by all studs, right? Justin Jefferson, yes, is a stud. TJ Hawkinson, going to be starting the year slow. Jordan Addison, we don't really know for sure how good he's going to be. So I think you're hoping you get 225 passing yards per game out of Sam Darnold. That would be 50 yards per game less this year, you know, passing than what we're used to seeing from Kirk Cousins if you average out his last three seasons, Marcus. So I did do a little research on that. The average drop for wide receivers taking that kind of drop in a passing game per game passing is 2.2 fantasy points. So it doesn't mean that Justin Jefferson's necessarily going to be a guy you just can't touch in the first round, but it's going to impact him. Like, and I just don't see a reason. We talked about it on yesterday's show as well with Kendall. I don't see a reason to draft him over Tyreek Hill, CeeDee Lamb, or Ja'Marr Chase. After that, you can decide what you want to do. But depending on how bad Sam Darnold is, this could impact him more than that. There is a range of outcomes where at the end of this year, we look up and we're like, wow, Justin Jefferson was wide receiver 13, and I drafted him as the wide receiver 2. That could happen now. With Kirk Cousins, we would have never said that. We would have said, nope, not possible unless Justin Jefferson or Kirk Cousins get hurt. Now, with Sam Darnold as your starter, that's in the range of outcomes. So last year I drafted Justin Jefferson every chance I had, period. Just every time he was on the board in the first three picks, I was taking him. I won't be doing that this year. I'm still going to take Justin Jefferson, but I'm going to be a little bit more cautious, Marcus.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how far down the board he slides a little bit. I think it's going to be.
I don't think it'll be much about Darnold. Based on the social media response I got yesterday and over the last few days, as I've posted some information about this, most people just reply and like say you're an idiot, you're overthinking it. This is Justin Jefferson; he's the wide receiver 1 overall. Like, I'm just following the data, so I'm not going to be ashamed of like the research I did. But I get why people feel that way, because I do think that Justin Jefferson, if I had to start a team this today and you tell me I've got to start with a position of wide receiver, Justin Jefferson's who I'm taking. So I don't disagree with the talent level, but this is a big drop off from Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I mean, I think talent is one thing. I think just the raw numbers, as you mentioned, of lower passing volume, fewer yards available, is going to necessarily have an impact. And then you throw 84%,
Marcus, 84% of those wide receivers that saw the kind of drop he's probably going to see went down in fantasy scoring. So it wasn't like, oh, it was limited to a few and that's skewing this average to the minus 2.2. No, there were really good wide receivers that were on this list that dropped by 4, 5, and 6 points per game. So like there's some definite risk here.
Yeah, no, I think that's unavoidable. But I also get people wanting to be optimistic about
Justin Jefferson.
100%. Jacoby Brissett is headed to New England, back where he started his career way back in 2016. He was stuck behind some guy named Brady. Now, Ian, at the moment, he's QB1. I don't expect that's going to hold. I would think that the Patriots sitting at number three probably draft a quarterback. But for now, Jacoby Brissett looks like he's you know, in the lead in that race.
Yeah, again, shout out Doug Heath. He's actually gone out and reported that, you know, the Patriots do hope for Brissett to serve as a veteran bridge slash backup quarterback. So I don't think there's any, you know, actual quarterback battle going on here. But shout out Jacoby for, you know, at least somewhat reinventing himself at these last two stops in Cleveland and then briefly in Washington last year. I mean, yeah, we have, again, a larger portion of his career of him being a pretty mediocre, you know, journeyman quarterback. But, you know, I see a lot of people throwing around completion, you know, percentage over expected as a pretty meaningful quarterback stat. He's third in the NFL over the past two seasons. So really did do an incredible job replacing Deshaun Watson in 2022 during that suspension. And last year, guys, he had 5 meaningful drives that he got to go in the game for, and Washington scored 5 touchdowns. So comeback mode, second half, all that, I understand it. But really, in terms of these bridge backup QBs, you know, Jacoby Brissett and Tyrod Taylor were the two guys where over the past couple of weeks, I just came away a lot more impressed with what they were able to accomplish in situations that, you know, their team's normal starting quarterbacks really weren't able to replicate. So good for Jacoby, still getting that bag, you know, living that, you know, dream backup QB lifestyle. Fantasy factor, no, but hey, maybe we get you know, one relevant receiver in New England one of these days. And I think Jacoby, at a minimum, like we saw with Terry McLaurin, like we saw with Amari Cooper, can keep one guy going relatively well, albeit, again, can't be too excited about it.
You guys heard it here first. New England, you don't need a quarterback. You've got Jacoby Brissett, draft Marvin Harrison.
There it is. just take MHJ, pair him up
word
with Jacoby
Brissett.
Word
for word what I said.
you know, look, a Jacoby Brissett, MHJ, Antonio Gibson, Ramondre offense. Who knows? Maybe there's something there.
Who's stopping this offense?
Dwayne, Jameis Winston going to the Browns. Looks like 1 year. Obviously, he's going to be the backup to Deshaun Watson. I mean, just your thoughts on what that means.
Yeah, they're hoping he doesn't have to see the field. But with what we've seen from Watson, there's no guarantee of that. You know, Watson's got the injury stuff he's battling through, has looked like complete crap pretty much every game that we've seen him. Watson's had a few little bright spots here and there, you know, so I mean, like you're hoping like that this guy can turn it around. But I don't know. I feel like, you know, Watson at this point, like, is he broken? This time last year, we were like, no, look, he's too young. These kind of quarterbacks at this spot in their career, they don't just suddenly fall off when they're in their prime. Oh, no, that's exactly what Watson did. So there are a lot of paths here to Jameis Winston getting on the field. I don't know that that will equal W's for the Browns, but what it will equal, and, you know, Ian can jump in here because Winston is one of his guys, it will equal fun. It will equal having fun watching the game, and it won't be bad for these wide receivers. You know, so we've got Jerry Jeudy has been added to this team via trade. We've already got Amari Cooper. You know, we've got Elijah Moore, who they added last year. They drafted Cedric Tillman. So, got David Njoku playing tight end. There are enough weapons here that, like, if they get into these shootout scenarios, now the Browns defense was really good last year, so that could keep Winston from getting into those kind of game scripts that we really love to see him in because they equal fantasy goodness for our wide receivers. But I would rather have that. Like, I think this is a positive if you're drafting Amari and these other guys, because you at least know you have a capable quarterback that if Deshaun continues to stink, if he comes in and gets hurt, at least you know it's not going to be a complete face plant at the quarterback position. You have a guy that's shown he can support multiple weapons from a fantasy standpoint in the past. I think that's really the biggest takeaway here. But I hand the floor over to Ian, because Jameis is truly one of Ian's guys.
This is sad, guys. This is going to be year five in a row that we haven't gotten to see Jameis with a full-time starting job. So for better and, let's face it, mostly worse, you know, the man is entertaining back there. I mean, just some of the decisions last year, he got to come in for one drive at the end of, you know, the fourth quarter, immediately throws a pick like 60 yards downfield. Derek Carr got banged up with a shoulder injury, and, you know, Chris Olave's making like contested catches over 3 guys in the end zone. So again, just the audacity that Jameis has to even attempt some of the throws. It's a joy to watch out there. And just what better way for him to end that tenure in New Orleans than going against his coach's orders and getting Jamal Williams a touchdown from the victory formation. So I agree with Dwayne.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, man. What
already. I don't know how I forgot that. That was great.
Shout out Cooter Doodle. I know she loved that moment. But yeah, man, I think, again, like Dwayne said, I mean, going actually and having Jameis as a backup, it's not that different than Joe Flacco. So I know that, you know, comeback player of the year, Flacco last year and stuff, was able to put up those numbers. He really was running hot in terms of a lot of his turnover-worthy plays, not turning into interceptions until obviously they did against the Texans. So yeah, I think it's a similar concept where with Amari Cooper, you know, with Judy, Elijah Moore, if we want to go down those roads, it is going to be, you know, just a nice little insurance plan. Nice little insurance plan. So I guess I'm a little more optimistic in Watson turning it around. I mean, we did only get to see him for like 3 games last year. I mean, that, I know people were trying to say the shoulder injury is fake, but I don't know, guys. I don't think there's some conspiracy going on about, you know, doing a fake surgery and this stuff. So I understand not liking the guy. At the end of the day, last time we saw him, he didn't let the ball hit the ground in a second half comeback win over the Ravens. Looked pretty good the week before that, too. So we'll see. But yeah, sadly, America's the real loser here because we don't get to see Jameis starting a football game every week.
I mean, yeah, man, that amazing cross field floater touchdown that he threw last year, like no one else in the NFL would even, it's not about, you know, can they attempt that throw? Nobody else would even think to attempt that throw besides Jameis Winston. So we are definitely going to miss out on that one. Hey, by the way, basketball fans, talking to you. The season is starting to heat up with bigger plays and even bigger wins. Today, we've teamed up with DraftKings, who have a brand new way to play daily fantasy sports. With DraftKings Pick 6, all new customers get a 100% deposit match up to $100 in Pick 6 credits when you deposit just $5 or more. Get in on the action right now. Getting started, it is simple. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and sign up using code DEBRIEF. Select 2 to 6 basketball players and choose if they're going to have more or less of a stat. Track your lineup and compete against others for a shot at huge cash prizes. New customers can get a 100% deposit match up to $100 in Pick 6 credits when they deposit just $5. That's code DEBRIEF only on DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours. Talk wide receivers. It has been fairly quiet in that market. We had Gabe Davis, who signed very early with the Jaguars. Jaguars making another move as well. Devin Duvernay, 2 years, $8.5 million. I mean, Dwayne, this is another guy who, you know, never really flashed in Baltimore. Was kind of, I guess, a more what special teams, what have you. But I don't expect his role to change dramatically in Jacksonville unless you see something different.
I don't see anything here. I'm kind of surprised, like, that Devin Duvernay even got this contract. And I'm not trying to hate on him. Like, dude's from University of Texas, not far from here. But I guess he's going to play some special teams. Like, the Jags, this feels like one of the last things they needed, even with Calvin Ridley moving on. It's like, I do feel like you've always got to have this kind of gadgety wide receiver for Doug Peterson, right? It's been Agnew here, the most recent. So maybe Duvernay takes over a little bit of that role, but nothing that's going to really help or matter for fantasy.
You know, whatever. We'll see him probably work as a wide receiver for. The real news that broke a couple minutes ago, guys, is Darnell Mooney getting paid, not by the Chiefs like many were expecting, but the Atlanta Falcons. 3 years, $39 million. $26 million guarantee for a guy that hasn't cracked 500 yards in 3 seasons. So, yeah, we've all seen the double move that, you know, roasted Jalen Ramsey. Wasn't a catch, but it was a cool route. I will give him that. I don't know, guys. Most viral moment from last year was him letting literally a game-winning Hail Mary, you know, bounce off his chest, onto his foot, and then into the lap of a Browns defender. So that seems pretty steep for me. There were, not too many landing spots where I think we were going to be overly excited about Darnell Mooney, you know, pretty average wide receiver. But a lot of money for a guy that I still think could probably be their number 3, number 4 pass game option, definitely behind Drake London and Kyle Pitts, and wouldn't be surprising if they use a day 1 or day 2 pick additionally here. So, you know, I guess, really, like, we're now giving Darnell Mooney all this money after you broke the bank for 36-year-old Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles. I hope it works out, Falcons fans, but whenever we see teams throwing around this level of money in free agency, I don't think it's a good sign.
I don't know. Arthur Blank spending all this money means the price of hammers at Home Depot might be going up very soon. That's all I can think.
Yeah, with Mooney, I mostly agree with Ian. I'm surprised he gets this much money. Yeah. But there was a time before health and some other things have kind of derailed him that, like, it looked promising, right? I mean, if you look at him, 18%, 22% targets per route run his first two seasons in the league. You know, that second year he had a 1.72 yards per route run with pretty terrible quarterback play overall. So I think there could be something here. But to Ian's point, I think he's third at best on the team as far as like what the pecking order looks like. And as much as we love Kirk Cousins and we're happy and we're excited about Drake London and guys, Ian's done a really good job of outlining. It's not like it's completely risk-free right now with Kirk Cousins and that Achilles injury, because it is on his push-off foot. He's also at an age where things could start to deteriorate. I thought Jay Moyer had a really good tweet, you know, this morning, like just kind of looking at it from the other angle that, like, hey, the Falcons just got out from under like this huge albatross contract of Matt Ryan, and they just put themselves right under basically the same archetype quarterback with Kirk Cousins around the same time they gave that deal to Matt Ryan. So like we like the Kirk Cousins thing because it's really good for London and it's good for the pass catchers here. And we like Zach Robinson. But obviously, it's not like there's zero risk right now with Kirk Cousins. So on Mooney, I think there could still be a little something here. Would I give him $39 million for 3 years? No, I think that's getting a bit unreasonable. But I wouldn't have given that contract, that same contract, to Gabe Davis yesterday either.
True.
All right, so there it is. That's the wide receiver news. It's been pretty bleak so far. I would imagine hopefully there's some more movement.
Calvin Ridley to the Cowboys today. Marcus, let's do this.
We could see. Let's see if that happens. The Cowboys have been very quiet so far. They re-signed a long snapper. that's kind of been it. Tight ends, the one big tight end name so far, Noah Fant. 2 years, $21 million from the Seahawks. A couple of guys leaving Seattle, though. Will Disley gone. Kobe Parkinson gets a shockingly big deal from the Rams. That surprised me a little bit. I mean, look, Ian, Noah Fant has never blossomed into the guy that at least I thought he could be coming out of college. I don't know. Does anything change? Does he get a bigger role now that those other two guys are gone?
I think it's a combination of Disley and Parkinson being gone, and also this being, you know, a new offense. I mean, Seattle for years, really the entire Pete Carroll tenure, was just very willing, regardless of who was playing tight end, to rotate, you know, multiple bodies at the position. So, no, I don't expect all of a sudden, you know, a change at coach to move Noah Fant to the top of the pecking order in the passing game. Still very much going to go through DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, who got a nice contract restructure low-key the other day, and obviously Jackson Smith and Jigba. So whenever we do have a player like Fant, I mean, again, if your best case scenario is as your offense is number four pass game option, it's tough to be too excited about it. But hey, past round one draft capital, there are things like, you know, yards per target over the past 2 years. Only George Kittle, Travis Kelce, and Dallas Goedert have Noah Fant beat. He's made the most out of his opportunities. But again, Dwayne and I were kind of talking about this recently. Like, this is, and guess what? I have been burnt on Noah Fant, you know, chasing this a little bit in the past. This is the sort of player that I think has been a weakness to me, because again, we look at some of these abilities of what they can do with the ball in their hands when they get the ball, and you kind of ignore the fact that they've been in a lot of different offenses and not been able to demand the ball all that often, a la, you know, someone like Gerald Everett as well. So again, I mean, I think in a pretty weak free agent class, I mean, Dwayne, I'm sure you had Noah Fant ranked as, you know, a top three, if not the top one available tight end going into free agency. So from that standpoint, I mean, yeah, it's good, and he's going to have some open opportunity. I think he could be a very good, you know, late round dart, third or fourth tight end, and, you know, some best ball lands. But are we actually going to be confidently ranking him as his top 16, even tight end? I don't think so.
Yeah, late round dart. But I mean, ultimately, there weren't a ton of great landing spots for a tight end. So I think you could argue that him coming back here with Disley and Parkinson leaving might have been about as good as we could hope for. To your point, I don't expect him to pass anyone in this, you know, pecking order. You got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett just redid his contract. He's going to be back. And we've got JSN, who's going to be working from the slot and really battling Fant for a lot of those same targets. But anytime we get a chance to have a guy that can have an 80% route participation, if they score some touchdowns, they have a chance to become a low end tight end one. So that's the kind of dart you're throwing. You're not throwing a dart at Fant thinking, oh, like this could be like some guy that suddenly now is a top six tight end. But like if things break his way, could he finish as the tight end 11, tight end 13? And those guys are all going to score about the same. Yeah, not going to win your fantasy league most likely, unless there are other dominoes that fall, like maybe two of the other receivers get hurt. He could give you spike week value because we're going to have some weeks where somebody from that trio or even two of those guys could be missing. So the runway is more open than ever for Fant, but it's still challenging for all the reasons that you said, Ian. You know, I will say, like, early in his career, he definitely flashed some things. You know, in 2020 season, he had a 22% targets per route run. 2021 was a 20% yards per route run. Those two seasons, 1.64 and 1.52. So those are all, like, when you look at, like, what tight ends have done over the last 3 years, and you look at how they rank, you know, from a fantasy scoring perspective, those are borderline tight end one or tight end 4 to 6, tight end 7 to 9 numbers. It's like, if he didn't have these other guys in front of him, I would say, yeah, Fant could easily, you know, be a guy that finishes as, like, the tight end, you know, 8. I think that would be a possibility. So that's kind of your ceiling. If something does happen long-term to one of these guys, when I say long-term, like in the preseason, they lose one of these receivers, I think Fant then picks up a little bit of steam. So I will say this, though, typically betting on these guys late in their careers, like, it's not a winning bet. Like, occasionally they do work out, and you gave some examples, Ian, of some of the things we look for with these tight ends, and they do take a little longer to mature. So we see a few more breakouts from them later in their careers than we do wide receivers. But overall, it's still not a huge difference from what we see with receivers. Usually we've expected them to do it by now.
So you're not expecting an Evan Engram sort of breakout?
No, but I think he's a good comp, Marcus, yeah, if things broke his way. He, like Ian said, he's that athletic guy that can work underneath. Gerald Everett's another one that's really in that kind of vein of player. You know, Evan Engram, if you look at him, they don't use him a ton down the field. It's all on drags and stuff where it's like, oh, you figure out it's a combo covers, it switches demand. Like, they can't, the linebackers can't keep up with Evan Engram, like, on those crossing patterns and things. And I think Fant can give you some of those same things. And, like, going back to even when we were watching him, you know, coming out of Iowa, like, that's a lot of the stuff that he was really good on in college. Get the ball to him, let him make plays. So I think it would take a bunch of things to break right, though, right? Evan Ingram's already shown us he can do that. But if Fant were to ever put it together, I think you just nailed it. That would be the comp. That's what you would be hoping for.
Yeah, yeah. But as you mentioned, there are a lot of things in his way in Seattle right now for that.
A lot of obstacles, yeah.
Formerly of Seattle, Will Dissly goes to the Chargers, 3 years, $14 million. I mean, we talked about, you know, Harbaugh and Roman wanting to sort of have more of a power run game. I assume Dissly, more of a blocker there. I mean, I don't imagine.
I was going to say, that's all we need to say here. I agree with you. I think this is just another data point telling us, like, Roman and Harbaugh have already come out and said it. We're going to run the ball more. And you even hear Roman, can you imagine Justin Herbert with a good run game? You know, well, now they signed Will Dissly. They've signed Gus Edwards. There's nothing fantasy wise for Will Dissly here probably. But it is another data point telling us that they're going to want to run the ball. And I think that we have to pay attention to that.
Yeah. Mike Gesicki going to the Bengals. I mean, Ian, does T. Higgins have to be traded for Gesicki to have any relevance? And even then, can he see enough targets in Cincinnati to make a difference?
It's tough. I used to be, you know, far more in on Mike Gesicki. But honestly, if you just, again, look more recently and not at the years where we had, you know, YOLO ball gunslinger Ryan Fitzpatrick helping make some things happen for him, it's tough for me to see Mike Gesicki go through a Mike McDaniel offense that really didn't have anyone other than Tyreek and Waddle, not manage to get involved, and then go to New England last year, reunite, you know, with Bill O'Brien, who recruited him at Penn State back in the day. Offense dying for any consistency in the passing game, and he couldn't get on the field there as well. So in terms of Cincy signing him, I mean, they signed a slot receiver at a tight end contract. It's another example of the position really getting shafted. I continue to not, you know why guys like Kyle Pitts and Brock Bowers don't at least try to declare as wide receivers, because they're just, you know, forcing themselves to get paid less. So from that standpoint, it sucks for Gesicki. I mean, this guy, on National Tight End Day, didn't even celebrate it. He called himself a big slot receiver. So tells you all you need to know there. I don't think it impacts, you know, Drew Sample, Tanner Hudson, or even, you know, the Bengals' ability to go into the draft and get someone like a Brock Bowers. Ultimately, you know, Gesicki, no, probably not going to be chasing him too much in fantasy land, but solid real-life upgrade. And to your point, Marcus, if we do see both Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins out of the picture, then I think we could actually get a bit more excited about it.
Colby Parkinson goes to the Rams, 3 years, $22.5 million. That number surprised the hell out of me, Dwayne. Yeah. I mean, does this mean Tyler Higbee is sunk? I mean, I don't even know what this means for the Rams.
I know the high end tight ends kind of get the shaft, but these lower end tight ends that are just role players, like, they get this is as good as a contract that most of the running backs that have actually done things in the league signed yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, there were guys that beat this, but Colby Parkinson, he just got a better deal than Austin Eckler, right? He got essentially the same deal that we've got for some of those other 3-year, $24 million deals. You know, so he got a better deal than Eckler. He got a better deal than Devin Singletary, got a better deal than Antonio Gibson. Like, really? Like, I mean, I know that running backs don't matter, but are we sure backup tight ends really matter this much to spend this much money? And there's a lot of guys getting these kind of contracts at the tight end position. So if you can be the lower level tight end, you don't even have to play that much. Maybe that's really your angle. You know, you come in the league, it's not as good as Chase Daniel's role. Like Ian will tell you that. But like after that, like this backup tight end thing isn't so bad. You come in, you play 30, 40% of the snaps, do some blocking, you know, make 22.5 mil over 3 years. I can think of worse ways, you know, to spend my time. I don't expect anything. You got Tyler Higbee getting an injury at the end of the year. So I think maybe early in the year, you get a little bit more out of Colby Parkinson, but this is just the Rams, you know, Sean McVay wanting to be able to be multiple. We know that he wants to do that. He likes to, hey, I might come out in 11. I could come out in 12. There's a lot of different things. So I don't think it changes much for fantasy, but it is, it's just funny to me how much these lower end tight ends get on these contracts.
When you talk about that, I was like, when you talk about that real quick, Kevin O'Connell so far has one of my favorite quotes of the offseason when they re-signed Johnny Munt, and he says he thinks Munt is the best number three tight end in the NFL. I'm like, what are we doing here?
I'm a longtime Johnny Munt supporter, and you never even heard me say that. Yep.
And, you know, on the open market. So absolutely surprised at the number. I will say Tyler Higbee, you know, had that late season ACL. He's someone who could be a cap casualty. So maybe Parkinson does end up actually.
They just re-signed Higbee last year, though.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. Davis Allen, someone I think they liked enough, you know, in part-time action. So I don't expect to be the Colby Parkinson show by any stretch. I'm surprised. If anything, I mean, the Rams kind of bringing him in, you know, obviously someone that the Seahawks lean in the run game. And then some of the moves they made in the interior offensive line. Yeah, Kyren Williams.
Re-signing one and then adding, yeah.
Not that it ever wasn't Kyren Williams RB1 season, but my God, I think he's about to get force-fed that football. Yeah. Sean McVay, you know, a fan of that power run game.
Yeah. Last one, Charlie Werner, formerly of the 49ers, signing a 3-year, $12 million deal with the Falcons. I mean, Dwayne, if Arthur Smith were still there, I'd say we should have to worry that he's going to start taking red zone opportunities from Kyle Pitts. I'm remaining confident that that's not going to be the case and that Werner is there strictly as sort of a depth kind of maybe, you know, maybe if they want to run 12 personnel.
I already saw this on Twitter yesterday. And a lot of it is tongue in cheek because it's just at this point, we just all love to do Kyle Pitts jokes, right? So it's just kind of part of what we do as a fantasy community, and we all like to get in on it. But I wouldn't worry about this at all, guys, you know, for Kyle Pitts. You know, when you look at the tight ends, there's a lot of guys in their average annual income, right? And their average contract value on a yearly basis that are in the same range. Ian Thomas, Will Disley, Foster Moreau, Drew Sample, Durham Smythe, Mo Alie-Cox, Oliver, you know, that, you know, Ian just mentioned, there's a lot of guys that get in this range. So I think, you know, Charlie Werner is your tight end number two. When you play 12 personnel, he's going to get out there. Maybe he does a little bit of blocking and relieves Kyle Pitts on some of those downs, but that's okay. Like if Kyle Pitts, as long as he's between that 75-85% route participation, I think we'll be pretty happy with him with the addition of Kirk Cousins and Zach Robinson as the offensive coordinator.
Well, I was going to say it's time to wrap it up and nothing has happened, but something has happened.
Uh-oh.
It has happened what we expected. The Baltimore Ravens signing Derrick Henry 2 years, $16 million worth up to $20 million, $9 million guaranteed in the first year. This is via Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport also having it. So what we anticipated happening is finally happening. I mean, Dwayne, I'll start with you. I mean, this just seems sort of inevitable, right? From the time it looked like Derrick Henry was on his way out of Tennessee, Baltimore just kind of seemed like the one spot. So the Ravens get their power running back to go along with Lamar Jackson and those wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, this is a perfect match. And when you look at Derrick Henry, yes, he's going to be 30.2 years old when the season starts this year. But if you look at like his, you know, the stats that are sticky year over year for running backs, now they don't always matter for fantasy, but it can help us get an idea of like where the player's at, right? From a standpoint of their career, 3.3 yards after contact last season. That was his average. That was still a really good mark. Not where his marks were 2 years ago when he was an elite superhuman, but that's still well above the league average, right? Of 2.9. And then if you look at his missed tackles forced per attempt, 20%. That's well above the league average of 17%. So this is still a plus running back when we look at his talent, his skill level. You know, how long is the contract for again?
It's 2 years.
2 years, about fully guaranteed? Or do we know?
The first year is fully guaranteed.
Yeah, okay. So 1 year fully guaranteed. Yeah, I think that's fine. I like Aaron Jones and Derrick Henry on one-year deals. Like, I think I might prefer that to Saquon Barkley on the multi-year deal that he got. Like, I think, you know, you're taking on additional risks signing these guys to longer-term contracts, even though we know Saquon is younger than both of these guys. But, man, Derrick Henry in Baltimore, like, I get excited about that. Now, it will be interesting because the Ravens have shown a tendency to just want to rotate these guys all the time. The other thing that the 1 year deal gives them is, do they really worry about that? Do they worry about if they just wear the tread off of Derrick Henry? Now, we know we'll get Keaton Mitchell back eventually. He suffered that injury at the end of last season, late last season. So it's going to take him a little bit of time to get back. We've got Justice Hill, who works a little bit in the passing games. I don't think those two guys completely go away, but I think Derrick Henry easily takes over the majority of that early down rushing workload. I think he's a running back too, Ian. Like, this is just off the cuff here, thinking about the Ravens. But I think he could still give you running back one upside if the Ravens' offense is really clicking. I think the one thing you can say about Henry is he gets a massive upgrade in the quality of offense that he's playing for versus last year, what we saw with the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, right now he's sitting as the RB15. Kenneth Walker, Josh Jacobs, Rashad White, those are the guys ahead of him. I think that's about right. I mean, we got Alvin Kamara, Ramondre Stevenson, you know, Dave Montgomery blow him. Maybe he ends up a little bit closer to Montgomery, but this is ideal. And I really do think some of the, you know, oh, Henry's washed, like, discussion and discourse, I think that's been confused a little bit with this Titans offensive environment as a whole falling off a cliff in recent years. I mean, we're talking about a pretty damn good offensive line, you know, from 2018 to 2021, 30th in back-to-back seasons, though, in yards before contact per carry. Last year finished as PFF's single worst offensive line in the league. So Henry himself, I mean, he's still been top 10 in terms of yards after contact per carry each of these past 4 years. And then shout out to at FF underscore Ryan B, really good follow over on the old Twitter. He actually pointed out that Henry last year had a higher max speed per next gen stats than what he managed in 2019 and 2020 combined. So I know that, you know, his style kind of takes him a little bit to get going. We'll see how well that meshes in Baltimore. But man, you talk about an offense that just breeds a fantastic rate in yards before contact per carry. It's with Lamar Jackson putting, you know, the ever living fear of God into defensive ends with that read option, you know, each and every time out. So fantastic fit. I don't think Henry is, you know, nearly as washed as people make him out to be. Yeah. We'll see, you know, Father Time's undefeated and all that. But hey, Henry might be an alien. So let's keep that in mind too.
I mean, look, Father Time is undefeated, but there are a few people who have stiff-armed him for a good long while, and Derrick Henry seems like he could be one of those people. And plus, look, going to Baltimore, it is a different offense, but, you know, Derrick Henry is there to do one job, and he does that one job really well, and I'm with you, Ian. I don't think he's washed yet. I think you put him behind a good offensive line with a whole lot of other offensive options around there that people have to pay attention to, and I think Derrick Henry can be incredibly productive. And look, we know when the Ravens get down close, we know who's going to get the football. So the touchdown upside is certainly there for Derrick Henry. So I think everybody, certainly fantasy-wise, is excited to see it. I'm sure folks in the AFC North, maybe not quite as excited to see it a couple times a year, but it is what it is. Look forward to kind of watching.
Having to worry about Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry on some of these design looks that people are going to get, that's going to be something. Because we saw some of the huge holes that would give to Gus Edwards. You get Derrick Henry running through those holes and linebackers like having to tee off on him whenever no defensive lineman has even touched him. Like, he hasn't even had a hand like scrape a shoestring yet. It's going to be pretty interesting to watch.
Yeah, without a doubt. So glad we were able to get that in. Glad that hit just before we were finishing up, because it would have been a tragedy if that landed moments after we wrapped up. But a full hour plus going through free agency. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, would imagine there will be a lot more movement as the day goes on. Still waiting to see some of these other wide receivers land. Still waiting to see what happens with Calvin Ridley, for instance, out there as well. But in the meantime, that'll do it for this live streaming edition of the Free Agency Debrief. Appreciate you hanging out with us for the whole time. Of course, you can go back and watch this later. And while you're at it, go over to fantasylife.com. Sign up for the newsletter. Yes, it still comes to your inbox every single day. It is worth reading while you're sitting and eating or drinking your coffee, eating your breakfast, whatever it is you're doing in the morning. But that'll do it for this edition of this show. For Ian Harditz, for Dwayne McFarland, I am Marcus Grant. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Enjoy the madness that is free agency, everybody. And we will talk to you again real soon.